Welcome to the Marietta Daily Journal podcast. I'm Dan Ratcliffe. During the week, you'll get the local news for Marietta, Kennesaw, Smyrna, and all of Cobb County right here. And on Sundays, like today, you'll find the Cobb Life Sunday podcast, where we talk to newsmakers, local celebrities, and people making a difference right here in our community.
Everyone loves a winner when they're in your corner. With over 40 years of experience, Johnson & Alday can help you win in a variety of scenarios. Whether it's an auto accident, slip and fall, dog bite, or anything in between, Johnson & Alday can help you win. And here's the best part. They are so confident in their detailed process that they won't charge you a dime until your recovery for an injury claim has been secured. Visit them online at johnsonallday.com or call 678-785-9595 to get started.
We're joined on the Cobb Life Sunday podcast by Bob Ott, former Cobb Commissioner Bob Ott. But Bob, if people don't know who you are, just give me the short little elevator pitch. Who is Bob?
Well, I mean, everybody always says a commissioner who happens to be a pilot. But what I would tell folks is I'm the pilot who is also a commissioner. I've been a pilot at Delta Airlines for 31 years, 8.5 years in the Air Force prior to that, and a couple of years teaching school.
What did you fly in the Air Force?
Mainly, I flew the FB-111, called the Aardvark, had a long nose, but the thing that most people know about it is it went really low, really fast.
Okay.
I've been down at 50 feet at about 900 miles an hour.
Wait, 50 feet off the ground?
Yes.
At 900 miles an hour?
Yeah, it's about 12 miles a minute.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
That's an experience, I guess, that you can't get anywhere else other than the Air Force.
Yeah, correct.
Now, let's address the elephant in the room. You were featured in a lot of news stories all over the place during the Afghan evacuation. You flew for Delta, flew some Afghan refugees back here to the United States.
Correct. And the MDJ had a great story about it. And I think, you know, everybody kind of knows the story. One thing I would add to it is everybody, you know, writes notes about volunteering. And we did volunteer to fly on our days off, but we did get paid.
Okay.
So I want to make sure everybody understands we did get paid. But yeah, it was, I did a total of three.
You did it three times.
Well, two of them brought refugees back and one was just ferrying an airplane.
Okay. So that means just bringing a plane back empty.
Well, we took it back. Yeah, took it over to Germany.
Okay. Fantastic. Now, when you were on the flight, did you interact with the people that were on the plane?
We do, and we talked about that. They talked about that in the article.
Okay. All right. So we can find all that
right
on the MDJ's website. Well, that's fantastic. What was the reaction like when you got home and you told people in your personal life that you had done this? Like, how did they respond?
I was kind of surprised. Got a lot of notes, got a lot of text messages. People thanked me for doing it, which is why I want to make sure people know that I volunteered, but I got paid.
Mm-hmm.
But they thanked me and they thought it was a great thing. So I would generally say that there was a lot of support.
Did you get support from people that you didn't know?
No, most of it was from people that I know.
Okay. Did that story go national at all?
Don't know. I got interviewed by the Financial Times.
Hey, that's okay. That's awesome.
So, I guess so.
How does that work? Did they just call you and say,
no,
hey?
That all goes through Delta.
Okay.
Yeah, all Delta-related interviews have to go through Delta.
Now, you've been a pilot for Delta for how long?
31 years.
And you're getting close to retirement.
But who's counting? About 182 days.
Right.
We have to retire at age 65.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe surprising to some, I'm 64 and will be retiring in April.
Tell me about being a pilot for Delta during COVID.
Well, you know, I think everybody's read how it just really there was not a lot of flying. And we have our option of bidding, being on call. We call it reserve or flying regular trips. Like right now, I'm back to flying trips, but I bid reserve during the pandemic. And you just get called based on seniority. Didn't get called a lot.
Really? So does that mean you're sitting at home just kind of waiting?
Pretty much. You're on call 24/7 for a certain number of days. And if they call you, you go fly. And if not, you know, you get paid to be on call and you find something to do. My younger brother said I practice retiring.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
So the entire pandemic for you was a dry run for what retirement's going to look like.
And if it is, it'll be good.
Yeah. Why? What'd you do?
Well, let's see. I got back into woodworking. Made cutting boards and chess boards and actually started getting into making some keepsake boxes for Eagle Scouts. And just a bunch of woodworking projects. And then I make my own wine. I think some people know that.
Okay.
And then my former assistant, Kim, and I now have two garden plots over at Hyde Farm.
Oh, really?
So we're growing vegetables.
Okay. There's a whole lot to unpack there. First of all, with the woodworking, is this something that was self-taught or?
No, actually, when I was in high school, long, long time ago, probably before you were born.
Probably.
Yeah. You don't have to agree with me. We had wood shop, metal shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I had wood shop, did some back then, and I've always enjoyed doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just kind of got back into it. And some of the stuff I'm doing now, yeah, I'm kind of teaching myself as I go along. I made some cutting boards that were pretty intricate. So.
And then the keepsake boxes for Eagle Scouts.
Yeah. So what happened was one of the other adult leaders came to me one day and says, hey, I got this idea about a keepsake box. Because anybody that's been an Eagle Scout knows that you have all this stuff. You put it in a box. It goes under the bed, in the closet or whatever. And then you forget about it until all of a sudden you come across the box. So he had this idea to make these wooden boxes. They're pretty big. They're like 20 inches by 13.
Okay.
And so we make boxes out of different types of wood, depending on what the person says they want to make. And we've made 20 boxes so far. And actually, I have like 9 in the process right now.
Really? Now, are you making them for specific Eagle Scouts or is it a gift that the Scouts are giving to them?
Well, yes. So we make it for an individual Scout. The parents buy it. And I don't make any money on it.
Okay. They're basically paying for materials?
Right. Pretty much.
Okay.
And so then we make it based on when their Court of Honor is coming up. And we try to have them, well, we have them done for the Court of Honor. And so the outside is, you know, it's kind of got a big eagle patch on the outside with their name. And then when you lift the lid, the inside has all the rank badges in a circle around an eagle badge. And it's got like red felt bottom.
Nice. And you're doing that all by hand? Like
we are.
Designing it and stuff?
Well, we did a test box.
Okay.
And figured out the mechanics because we do box joints on the corner, which neither one of us had done before. And we improve it as we go along. But yeah, all done by hand.
So were you a scout?
I was. I'm an Eagle Scout.
You're an Eagle Scout.
As is my son.
Okay.
And I was a scoutmaster for just about 3 years.
Were you? Okay. So what are your thoughts on being an Eagle Scout and the fact that, so I've heard this before, that an Eagle Scout's resume goes to the top.
You know, I've heard that too. I don't know if it really happens. I've never been in a position where you interview people, but I've heard it so many times. But I think if you look at the people that, you know, you find out are an Eagle Scout, there always seems to be a common thread or trend. I mean, they're very self-confident, go-getters. You give them a task, they're going to do it. They get it done.
What do you think about having girls finally be a part of being able to be an Eagle Scout?
Well, I mean, as long as everybody's treated the same, you know, and everybody does the same things to get there, I don't think it really matters whether you're boy or girl.
Just as long as you're doing the work and earning the badges.
Correct. Now, of course, logistics, with having been a scoutmaster, you know, you can't really have a troop that has boys and girls together for the obvious reasons when you have teenagers. But also, you know, I think it's a known fact that girls mature faster than boys. And one of the really big things about scouting is developing leadership and also allowing the scouts to experiment and fail, you know, try to accomplish something and maybe have to come back and do it again. And so I think with the different maturity levels, it's good for girls to be with girls and boys to be with boys.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't really see any reason, you know, why girls couldn't be an Eagle Scout also.
I love that. Now, this might be going back a little ways, but it's my understanding that Eagle Scouts have like large projects that they do at the end, right?
They do.
What was yours?
I actually remember.
Okay.
I set up a blood drive.
Did you really?
With the Red Cross, yes.
Okay. And how difficult was that?
Well, what I remember, it didn't seem that difficult compared to what my son did for his. But, you know, I had to kind of get the names and send the notices out and then set it up and appointments and all that stuff. You know, that's what I kind of remember. So
was that experience with the Scouts and becoming an Eagle Scout, is that where you really got a passion for working with your local community?
I don't know. I mean, I think it kind of developed over time. I mean, my love of going to the outdoors, I think, came from that. And I think it did my son, too. He's a forestry major at Auburn.
Okay.
Eagle Scout, you know, been outside.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I think just things come along. You know, one of the questions when I was a scoutmaster and I would have to do the scoutmaster conference for Eagle Scout, I would always ask the scout, and this was kind of talking about goals, I would say, okay, you're 17. Tell me about yourself when you're 37. Now imagine a 17-year-old when you ask that question.
Yeah.
And they would kind of stumble a little bit. And I would say, well, tell me what you're doing. Do you have a family? Do you have kids? You know, what do you envision you're working? And after they would answer, we would talk about it. And I say, you know, the idea is you have to set goals for yourself. And I said, you are here today because you set the goal to be an Eagle Scout. And you are here because you accomplished that. And so the idea in life is to set goals so that, you know, you may never get to that, but the things that you do along the way are just going to make you a better person.
That's good. I like that a lot. I'm going to write that down as a note.
So you want me to ask you the question, what are you going to do in 20 years?
No, please don't. I do love that somehow we got on to Eagle Scouts off of what you learned in COVID. So I asked you what you did during COVID. You were off. You started making the boxes. And there was the keepsake boxes for it, just trying to follow the pattern
right.
of how
and
we got
here. And then I talked about it. I make my own wine. It's a hobby.
We have to learn about the wine. Like, what do you specialize? What do you do?
Well, it's just kind of, it's something to do. I mean, I give most of it away as gifts, or like I've donated to The Zone when they have a fundraiser,
a wine basket.
Mm-hmm. It's just kind of fun. And there's a challenge to it in the fact that you can mess it up.
Yeah.
And you can tinker with it and get it to be really good. I make all different kind of varieties. So there's a store over in Sandy Springs where I buy a kit. Mm-hmm. Comes with grape juice. You kind of mix it. Sits like that for 2 weeks. Then you do some other steps, and then it clears. And basically, 7 weeks later, you have 30 bottles of wine.
Wow.
And then you got to let it age.
Mm-hmm.
And so think of my last name. I call my wine Black Otter.
Okay. Love
it. Has an otter on the label.
Yeah.
And for the pandemic, I put a mask on the otter.
We're joined on the Cobb Life Sunday podcast by Bob Ott. Bob, you're a fascinating individual because there's so much of your history is online. You can find out so much about you online. I want to talk about Cobb County specifically. So when did you become a commissioner?
I first ran in 2008.
Okay.
Got elected. Mm-hmm. So my first day in the job was January 1st, 2009. And 9 months later, right about this time, we had the Great Flood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 750-year event.
Wow.
Talk about a trial by fire.
For people who don't quite know, please give us some details.
So the tropical storm parked over the county for 24 hours and dropped 22 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. The river rose 29 feet above flood level.
Wow. It was 29 feet above flood level. Wow.
Down on Cochise Drive in the district, the water was at the second floor of houses.
No way.
Yes.
Like, you couldn't even see Columns Drive, I guess.
No.
Yeah. It wasn't even there.
Well, it was pretty much underwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems
and
the flood.
And as a District 2 commissioner, I had most of the county that was along the river.
Yeah.
But now South Cobb got hit pretty hard, too. Sweetwater Creek. And yeah, it was a massive event.
So what did y'all do?
I think that was the first opportunity to kind of step in between the citizens and the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, there was still power to some of these houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the power companies turned it off, some people actually had their air conditioning units and everything elevated, but they couldn't get the power turned back on. So there was a lot of phone calls trying to cut through the red tape there. And then there's a lot of permitting that the county required to get work done. Well, these folks were having to drive up here to the square from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is crazy. Because my kids, 8 and 10, the three of us walked from house to house on Cochise Drive. And so I got county staff to go down there where the people were. And I said, look, they're going to put some kind of marker out at their mailbox if they need you to stop and give them a permit.
Wow. And that was 9 months?
9 months as a commissioner.
A commissioner?
Now, I had a little bit. I'd been on the planning commission for 4 years. So kind of knew who the players were.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was. And so then. Now, go ahead, 12 years, my last year as commissioner, what did we have? The pandemic.
Yeah, that's right.
So there are a lot of people that say, we don't need your bookends.
We're glad Bob is gone. Jeez. Well, I want to talk more specifically, but I mentioned last week I talked to Jerrica Richardson, who is now the District 2 commissioner. And what I learned in that interview, which you can hear wherever you get podcasts, is that the Cobb County Commission has a lot of power. There's a lot of authority there, and it's far more than I ever realized.
Yeah, well, there's a couple ways to look at it. You could use the word power, or you could use the word ability.
Mm-hmm.
you know, yeah, power, yes, you can get stuff done. But I looked at it always more as ability or the opportunity to help. You know, the flood, we talked about the flood. There was a lot of stuff that those folks would never have known. And believe it or not, when I first got elected, there were no smartphones. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine life without it right now?
Yeah, I know.
There were no commissioner town halls. Mm-hmm. There were no weekly newsletters. Those were all things like the newsletter. I kind of stole the idea from Tom Price. But town hall, it's like, to me, it's like, how can I use the abilities I have as a commissioner if I don't know what the people need? Mm-hmm. So one of the things I kind of took from my predecessor was to have quarterly meeting groups with like people from around the district. Because I would always tell them, I said, look, you're my eyes and ears. And without you telling me, I can't be everywhere all the time because I'm a citizen legislator. I had a job. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, I was a pilot who happened to be a commissioner.
Sure.
And the pilot job was supposed to be full time and the commissioner part time. Sometimes I think they kind of switched.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would say it's more the ability, the opportunity to kind of step up for the people you represent.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Cobb Life Sunday podcast.
You deserve better than your bank. Better service, better rates, better solutions. If you live or work in Cobb County, now is the perfect time to make the switch to the Credit Union of Georgia, the better way to bank. Since 1960, Credit Union of Georgia has been providing Northwest Georgia with financial solutions that make sense for your home, business, and family. As a homegrown, not-for-profit cooperative, our members are our mission. Not only will you get the best loan rates, you'll get personalized customer service from people who understand your needs. Plus, Credit Union of Georgia provides real convenience with a network of more than 30,000 accessible ATMs and branch locations across the country. Of course, there's also 5 locations right here in Cobb County. Ready to see how much better your banking can be with Credit Union of Georgia? Become a member today or apply for a loan online by visiting www.cuofga.org. Credit Union of Georgia, the better way to bank.
Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We guarantee a stable, dry foundation. With over 30 years of experience and a lifetime of support, residential and commercial. Hey, we do it all. From basement waterproofing and repairs to your foundation. Dial 678-ESOG now.
We're back on the Cobb Life Sunday podcast with former Cobb County Commissioner Bob Ott, who is a pilot who was a commissioner. I like how you say that. You're a pilot. That's what you do. That's who you are. And then you were also a civil servant.
Well, and it kind of goes with the founding fathers. They believed in citizen legislators. I mean, you know, you read stories about how they would have to send the marshals out to get the legislators to come back and do the government's work because they were tending their farm or their animals or their blacksmith shops or whatever. I mean, the whole country was founded on people that not working for the government. Mm-hmm. They were doing the people's business, but they had jobs.
They had their own jobs, yes. Their own families to deal with and not 24 hours a day dealing with the government.
Now, of course, I'm not sure they were representing 185,000 people mm-hmm. like District 2 has. But
give me your thoughts on Cobb County then when you started in 2008 to Cobb County now.
I think back then it was probably a little bit more suburban and less associated with Atlanta. You know, there were things that kind of people thought that at night Cobb County lifted up the drawbridge on the Chattahoochee, mm-hmm. any place that it crossed. And I think now, you know, but there's just a lot more interaction across county lines, city lines. But I also think that, you know, with the Braves Stadium and a lot of the changes that have happened in the Cumberland area, that you really, Cobb has a destination now that people come to because of what's there, not just because it's Cobb. That's probably the biggest change that I can see. You know, I live close by. I live about 2.5-3 miles from the stadium, and just the changes in that area are just, you know, unbelievable.
Are you spending a lot of time over there?
We do. I share 4 seats with 6 or 5 other people, so we go to a lot of games, mm-hmm. and, you know, the Battery is a great place to go. So I think, you know, all in all, it's just the stuff that is added to the area, improvements on Powers Ferry Road and stuff like that have just really been a good thing.
What were, when you were a commissioner, what were the objectives you had that came to fruition?
I think the biggest one, and it's one of the ones I ran on, was giving the people a voice, you know, letting them have access. I mean, almost everybody has my cell number. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows where I live. when I would have a town hall, I would have about 150 people. And funny things would be people would call my cell phone, which works anywhere I am in the world. And I might be down in Buenos Aires on a trip. So I'm down under, right? And I answer the phone and they go, oh, I got you. I said, well, you called me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, where are you? And I said, Argentina. And they go, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, I said, I answered the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I gave you the number because I would send out every time I ran, I sent out a refrigerator magnet. Which the funny story there is people would say, I know you. You're on my refrigerator. And I wanted to say, do you have like a target on my face too? Yeah. So it was really to just give people access to their government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the funny thing today is, and you even doing it, well, not as much, but I'll run into people and they go, hey, commissioner. And I'm like, I'm not the commissioner anymore. I'm just like a normal person.
But won't you always be former commissioner?
Well, former commissioner, that's true. But people just say commissioner. It's like I have a title. And I'm like, no, I'm not, you know, I'm just a normal person.
Yeah, I don't know how that works because, so Roy Barnes was in here, but I still call,
and
him,
you call him governor.
Because,
right.
I mean, because he was Governor Roy Barnes.
I know, so. It's kind of, I mean, people are being respectful, but it,
yeah.
As the person receiving it, you're just kind of like, it's a little bit awkward because I'm not really the commissioner. I, you know, you want to say thank you, but
sure.
Just call me Bob.
Do you still get phone calls from anybody? Is there anybody looking at their refrigerator going, oh, I should call Bob and ask
yes.
him about so-and-so? Really?
Yes. Yes. Matter of fact, I have a meeting coming up to help some people in a neighborhood that don't know where else to turn. And so somebody said, oh, you should call Bob. So, of course, you know, my wife will say, because I don't know how to spell the word no.
Yeah.
I'm meeting with them to see what I can do to help.
But do you see that as like a public service?
I do. I mean, I've always, you know, anytime somebody, you know, if it's somebody I know or whatever that needs some help, I try to help when I can. It's just kind of, you know, it's what God says we should do, is so we should help people. And so I try to when, you know, when they ask. Got a good friend, her house got flooded most recently, and we're just waiting for her to get the dumpster and help with that part. But, you know, it, community service, I mean, you know, it's just kind of helping people in need.
And is it because you just have experience with red tape that people call you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what happens is they kind of go through the normal channels, and when they hit the roadblock, they're like, oh, well, I know who we can call because he won't say no.
You're like a local almost superhero. Like,
well, let's not get carried away.
It's a local.
I got to be able to fit out the door here.
Like
when we're
a
done.
Handyman. It's like you can fix the things, but it's.
Well, no, I mean, I would describe it this way. Superhero, no. What I always tell people when they're running for office is that if you want people to vote for you, they have to feel like they can sit down and have a cup of coffee or a beer with you because they feel you're just like them. You know, if you're up in this pedestal, I always told people when I ran, I said, look, if you run into me in Home Depot, I'm going to be in shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops because that's what I wear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, look, I didn't even shave for today.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's not superhero. It's more of just the average Joe just wanting to kind of help people and with the capabilities that I've been given.
Now, circling back to what you mentioned, you have 182 days. As we record this, you have 182 days left at Delta. And then you're going to retire. And then are you going back into local government? Are you?
No.
You're not?
No. When people say, are you going to run for office? I said, the only thing I'm going to do is run from it. No. And it's like, you know, 12 years, it was a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's kind of like people stay in politics for too long. And you go from being that citizen legislator to being a politician. Because I used to always tell people I'm not a politician. They're like, oh, really? What are you? I said, I'm an elected official.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what's the difference? I said, I have a job and it's not politics. And so I think that if all you do is politics, you become a politician.
We're going to wrap up here soon. But Bob, let's talk practically. For the time being, what's your advice on traveling? Since you are a Delta pilot and you're traveling all the time.
Right.
Give me some basics to really help
Bob
people
out. This is just Bob talking, no official.
Yes, no official.
There's people flying. There's rules to be followed. If you follow the rules, you know, clearly it's safe because otherwise it wouldn't allow people to fly. In the last month, I've been to Germany. I've been to England. I've been to Germany a lot. And then just came back from Greece. So, you know, I mean, it's just people need to be safe, but it's no different than when you travel any time of the, you know, whether it be flu season or just even being safe in a city. I mean, you know, you got to be smart.
And then the question I've always wanted to ask a pilot, do you get to, like, do some touristy stuff when you go to these places?
So we do. I mean, okay. What we don't do is, like, if, when you go on a trip, you say you fly from here to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's, no, let's do a different one. You fly from here to Baltimore.
Okay.
And you stay.
Mm-hmm.
So for the average domestic pilot, they fly from Atlanta to Baltimore, then Baltimore, say, back to Atlanta, then maybe Atlanta to Jacksonville, and then they lay over, and probably for about 11 or 12 hours.
Okay.
Then they, and they do the same thing, 3 or 4 legs a day for 4 days.
Okay.
In and out of Atlanta, which in the thunderstorm season is, you know, can be a mess.
Sure.
International, we kind of jokingly say we fly someplace for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, next week I fly to London.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll fly Atlanta to London, and we'll get there at, like, 5 in the morning. I'll take a nap. We get up. We go to dinner. Go to bed. Get up. Fly home. We're here 24 hours. When I do Rome or Greece, it's 48 hours. So you do that the first day. Then the second day, for example, in Athens, I went to the Acropolis.
Really?
And went around and walked to the Acropolis and stuff like that.
So you do get to go and, like, see a little bit of the world as well.
But there's always that dinner thing. So, like, yeah, when I go to London, we'll probably go to the Lebanese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to Rome, I got a friend who I've met, like, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Go to Tony's. Everybody knows Tony's.
So you have favorite restaurants all around the world. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, this, I guess it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I guess I could write. Maybe I could write a travel guide for the MDJ.
That is something you absolutely could do. You could, in fact, you could probably host that podcast.
Well, you know, a funny story is, I will send friends to the restaurant in Rome,
mm-hmm.
and I send them with a picture of me and the owner,
mm-hmm.
but I don't tell them anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'm going to give it a secret here. But so what happens is they show the picture. Tony says, "Oh, Bob sent them." The food just starts coming out. The appetizers just start coming out on the table.
Yeah.
With the wine and the water. You're going to be there for 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And about halfway through dinner, I'll get a text, you know, the OMG, and they're like, wow.
Yeah.
So.
That's super cool. It's one thing to be a regular and called by name at your local Waffle House. It's another thing to be a local and or be a regular and called by name at a restaurant in Rome, Italy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I've been there so many times.
I guess. It just strikes me as very cool.
Well, I think what it does is it just shows that the world is a much smaller place than mm-hmm. a lot of people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us have a tendency here in Georgia or Marietta or whatever is saying, you know, hey, the world revolves around the square. Well, it doesn't. But, I mean, so if you like that, you can do that. But if you don't, there's so many opportunities out there to see so many other things.
I love that. I've very much enjoyed this conversation. Bob Ott, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
When you have experienced the loss of a loved one, you can trust Carmichael Funeral Home to guide you through the arrangements necessary to create a meaningful ceremony that celebrates the unique life being honored. At Carmichael Funeral Homes in Smyrna and Marietta, our staff is committed to providing your family with the highest quality care and service in your time of need. In addition, we take pride in our responsibility to lighten your burden as you take the first steps toward healing. No matter what your choice, we believe in lives lived well. Please contact us with any questions regarding your pre-arrangement requests. At Carmichael Funeral Homes in Smyrna and Marietta, individual attention, providing support to the community, healing lives and grieving hearts, and celebrating lives well lived are our privilege to help. Contact us today or visit us online at carmichaelfuneralhomes.com. Celebrating memories you'll always cherish. Carmichael Funeral Homes.
Are you struggling to find the right home in these tough markets? Hi, I'm Jeffrey Drake of Drake Realty, with 7 offices across Metro Atlanta and 2 right here in Cobb County. The real estate market in Cobb County can be competitive. That's why you need a team on your side. My team of over 700 agents is one of the biggest in the county, and we have been turning dreams into realities for 28 years now. Next time you decide to buy or sell in Cobb, trust the team that knows the lay of the land. Visit us online at drakerealty.com.
Thanks for listening to the Cobb Life Sunday podcast. Be sure to listen all week long for local news from the Marietta Daily Journal. This podcast is a production of BG Ad Group. Darren Sutherland, executive producer. Jeremy Powell, creative director. Jacob Sutherland, director. Producers Jason Gentarola and Matt Golden. And Kezia May, copywriter. All rights reserved.